Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. In his new book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, John Ronson investigates the world of public shaming, where social media has made everyone a vigilante and where a poorly phrased tweet or comment can catapult a person to public enemy number one overnight. Shaming moves with lightning speed and has a terrifyingly powerful effect, sometimes destroying a person's entire life. John Ronson follows up with those whose lives have been left in tatters and question those being most cruel in the anonymous internet playground, resulting in a very powerful dispatch from the front lines of the escalating war on human nature and its flaws. John Ronson's books include the New York Times bestsellers The Psychopath Test, Them, Adventures with Extremists, and The Men Who Stare at Goats. It's a great pleasure to welcome John Ronson to the program. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, lovely to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. I can't tell you how much, well, I've enjoyed your work for a long time, but I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed reading this book.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
It's a really fascinating, very funny look at what I see as a huge problem and something that is there and isn't often addressed and talked about. I want to get into the meat and potatoes of the story, but let's just, as a jumping off point, talk about a case that we were just talking about 5 minutes ago in this program, and that is Trevor Noah.
Right.
Trevor Noah was named the new host of The Daily Show on Monday by Comedy Central. Glowing articles in most major newspapers yesterday morning, and yet by the afternoon there were posts on NPR, Wall Street Journal, and Time Magazine saying that within 24 hours that he went from a hero to a public enemy. because of tweets that he had made, in some cases going back 10 years.
Yeah, and these are such big words, right? Here, you know, from hero to villain. It's and this is what we've done now, is we've created a stage for these constant artificial high dramas where everybody's either a magnificent hero or a sickening villain, even though we know, you know, that that's not how human beings actually are. But we've created this damaging, life-destroying world for ourselves.
So what do you think, should there be, first of all, let me ask a question. Should there be a statute of limitations? If you're looking at something of especially of a young man, who in some cases these tweets were written when he was in his early 20s and a up-and-coming comedian, is that taking it out of context when we then throw those back in the face? Or is public record public record?
Yeah, no, it's totally unfair what's happened to Trevor Noah. I mean, you know, like everybody, when I first read those tweets yesterday, I was like, you know, whoa, you know, these are kind of offensive. And then you realize, you know, because we all get swept up in that moment of, you know, judgment and righteousness. But then you realize, like, here's a guy who's written, you know, 9,000, 10,000 tweets. Somebody has combed through them, discovered that 8,995 of them are either funny or innocuous. Five are offensive. And then we all decide, even though we know this isn't how humans actually are, we all decide, okay, those five tweets are like a clue to this guy's inherent wickedness, his worthlessness. You know, let's define him by these five tweets. Now, you could say, you know, Trevor Noah's a public figure. He's about to do an important job, and it is an important job. And, you know, personally, as a huge fan of The Daily Show, I'd rather he hadn't told those jokes. But the fact is, you know, what this is doing is creating a society where everybody's getting defined by the worst joke they ever wrote. Children are getting damaged because of this kind of surveillance society of social media. You know, it's really dangerous and really damaging. And I think the world's only, you know, I think with my book and Monica Lewinsky's TED Talk, you know, the world is just beginning to wake up to it.
You mentioned Monica Lewinsky. One of the most fascinating things I've seen in a long time is the interview that Monica Lewinsky did with you about this very topic, which is available on Vanity Fair's website. And she talked to you about this book. And here's a woman, obviously, who is kind of the poster child for exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Here's a woman who, you know, as she says about herself, was almost humiliated to death. And when, you know, when we're all ganging up and making our Monica Lewinsky jokes, you know, you forget that, you know, A, you're nearly killing somebody here. And, you know, there are, you know, people do die because of this. And we're doing this every day. You know, so I went on this journey with this book where I wanted to meet the people who had been destroyed. And what I think I've written, as well as it being a funny book, I think it's like a really anxiety-inducing book. I think you feel what yes. it feels like to be Monica Lewinsky or Justine Sacco or the other people in my book. You know, you feel that agony because we know this really could happen to us. And so, yeah, I'm sort of hoping, you know, that, you know, this book is like kind of like visiting the slaughterhouse, and it's more difficult to order the steak in the restaurants once you've visited the slaughterhouse.
It's fascinating to me because, as you say, you use the two cases that you just mentioned. Monica Lewinsky's case is interesting because it really was before social media really took off. And although obviously we still, you know, she still deals with it today. She just started a Twitter presence, so there is that. But and then you compare that to the Justine Sacco case, this publicist who told a bad taste joke about AIDS, and then that ruins her career.
Yeah, absolutely. When I watched Monica Lewinsky's TED talk, you know, she got like a standing ovation, and I was thinking, well, that's great, you know, because she did brilliantly, and it's right that she should be, you know, brought back into society. But then I thought, you know, half the people giving Monica Lewinsky a standing ovation would still quite happily tear apart Justine Sacco for what's seen as like a political failing, even though I think Justine is just as innocent as Monica. So Justine Sacco tried to make a kind of Colbert-style joke, you know, a kind of liberal joke where she was pretending to be a kind of outrageous lunatic. So she wrote, just before getting on a plane, she wrote, "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white," and pressed send and got no replies, which she never does because, you know, she only had 170 Twitter followers. So, you know, felt that kind of sad feeling we all feel when the internet doesn't congratulate us for being funny. And then got on the plane, and while she slept, she was destroyed. When she woke up in Cape Town and turned on her phone, straight away there was a text from somebody she hadn't spoken to since high school that said, "I am so sorry to see what's happening to you." And she was just crushed. Her tweet went around the world. People were calling for her. Obviously, there was like, "Let's rape her and kill her," because you always get that if you're a woman. But also, you know, nice people like us were destroying her too. Everybody was destroying her. She united everybody that night in condemnation.
What is there about that power that we go for the negative and we go for the, not just the comment of "I like this" or "I don't like this," but that we're ultimately, it seems, in many of these, that we're looking for, we want to destroy.
Yeah, I think we want to be like, we don't want to see it as destroying. We want to have our cake and eat it. I said this to Monica Lewinsky the other day. I'm not sure, I can't remember if they used this bit in the interview or not, but I said, you know, we want to destroy Monica Lewinsky and not feel bad about it.
Yes, so, you did say yeah. that, yes.
Oh, good, good. Because, so like, how do we do that? So, you know, either we say, oh, well, they deserve it because they're a sociopath or whatever. We use language like that. Or Justine Sacco is just a racist. Or we say, oh, I'm sure they're fine. You know, so we want to, you know, because, you know, we're like drone strike operators. We're not in the same room as the people we're destroying. So we sort of trick ourselves into thinking it's okay.
It seems that, and Monica Lewinsky makes this point in that interview, she said it's a strange combination of schadenfreude and othering people.
I'm really interested in the othering of people. I think all my books are about that. And what I found really interesting is that when I say, you know, look at, you know, in my book, The Psychopath Test, I talk about how the pharmaceutical industry has a kind of desire to reduce people to diagnostic labels for their own, you know, business ends. You know, not obviously just at its worst, at its most extreme. And everybody kind of loves me for saying that. When I'm saying, look at those people over there, you know, who are othering people, everyone kind of congratulates me. With this book, I'm saying, look, we are the crazy ones now. We're the ones doing it. We're the people reducing people to the worst tweet they ever wrote. And some people are finding that really troubling to hear. And people are saying, oh, well, maybe John Ronson's a racist too.
For
it's like they can't handle this notion that maybe they've lost their moral compass. So all they do is dig in their heels and try and then attack the person who's, you know, trying to shine a light on that behavior.
And I also find it interesting that if someone decides to walk away from Twitter or walk away from social media or not to be involved at all, that they're then seen as cowards.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, if you do walk away, I mean, really, the only wise thing to do if you're at the end of shaming is to just stay completely silent, because anything you say. I'll give you an example. When my Justine Sacco story was from the book was excerpted in the New York Times, you know, most people, 90% of the people were, you know, they liked it and, you know, thought it was the right way to talk about Justine. But then I got like 10% were like writing things like, oh, what racist is John Ronson going to put his cape on for next? I kind of got things like that. And then I didn't reply to any of them. And the only thing I wrote was, by the way, this is a book extract. It's not a standalone article. And I noticed all these people started tweeting, now John Ronson's saying it's a book extract. Like, anything I would say at that point would just be more evidence for the prosecution. So all you can do is just stay completely silent, which is the last thing you want to do because you're a human being. And, you know, human beings like to communicate with each other and explain nuances. But we've created this sort of Stasi-like world on social media where the only way to survive is to either be bland or silent.
A person writes an article about anything and puts it up online, say New York Times puts in an article or Washington Post puts up an article, and then there's the comment period. You know, underneath the article online, you can read the comments. And they're the most vicious, horrible things you've ever read in your life.
Yeah.
And then the people start attacking each other. And what I come away from that is, first of all, I can't read it just because I find it boring. But second of all, what is that serving? Like, what does that serve?
It's a kind of, I mean, the comments.
Do we need that?
Well, we seem to have this need. This is a slightly different thing that's going on. Like when we tear apart Justine Sacco, for instance, what I think we're trying to do, I mean, there's certain people who are just getting joy from using outrageous language, you know, so that, you know, there's a kind of minority of kind of trolls who just enjoy the, you know, the chaos of it all. But I think most people are trying to be good people. They're trying to be like Rosa Parks. You know, we empathize with people who die of AIDS in Africa, so we're going to tear apart this woman. So people are trying to be Rosa Parks, forgetting that Rosa Parks was really courageous. And there's nothing courageous about destroying a woman while she's asleep on a plane. So, you know, what's ironic to me is that in this kind of desire to be empathetic, we are creating these, you know, incredibly unempathetic situations where we're just ruining people for nothing.
Yeah,
it's really, I mean, the comments, all the sort of blah 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 on the comments, I agree with you, that's just weird. That feels like a kind of hobby for people.
Well, it's I mean, to me, it's interesting. I mean, if it's used for the spirit of which is, I think, is intended, i.e. here is an article about an issue, what do you think about the issue, which is no different than a cameraman and a reporter, and the reporter is asking, okay, you know, what do you make of this that's happening in the world, and get a man on the street perspective. Okay, I get that, but we don't do that. Instead, it's this destruction.
It's this attack, exactly.
Yes.
You know, all of this stuff started with the best intentions, and to a large extent, the good intentions are still there. I mean, you know, I'm living in New York at the moment where the, you know, after Eric Garner was killed by the NYPD, you know, on social media, these protests were organized and, you know, the protests were very successful. And, you know, you would assume the NYPD is going to think twice next time it has somebody in a chokehold. So, you know, once in a while, you know, the kind of democratization of justice, this kind of, you know, leveling of the playing field where, other, you know, hitherto silenced people suddenly had a voice, you know, can only be cheered on. But the problem is that it just so quickly goes. You know, it's like we so enjoy righting wrongs and attacking privilege that we start doing it when the person actually isn't privileged and hasn't actually done anything wrong. You know, that's the real problem. There's a lot of collateral damage going on. A hell of a lot.
And as you point out in the book, a lot of it, you really can't get over. I mean, it's always there, right?
It's always there. And, there are companies who will kind of scrub, you know, your bad reputation on the internet, but they charge. And in fact, in my book, I meet one of these companies, right, and I hook them up with this woman who was badly publicly shamed on the internet, and it's rather lovely. I mean, they really helped her, and it's a really interesting, mysterious world, the world of reputation scrubbers on the internet that I write about in the book. But really, you can only, unless somebody like me comes along and kind of hooks you up with one of these people, you have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for the service. So, you know, yes. Again, you know, we think we're creating this egalitarian world, leveling the playing field, but it's still only the super rich who can afford the reputation management companies, and the people getting destroyed are kind of ordinary people just like us who can't afford reputation.com.
When we talk about people like Monica Lewinsky and even Trevor Noah and people of that have a reputation that are out there, that's one thing. But you also point out, I mean, this is where, so you bring it down to a micro level of a 15-year-old kid in high school and having that public shaming.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I was giving a talk, and this is why I think my book is so important. I mean, you know, without sounding too self-aggrandizing.
Okay. All right, John, I'll say it. Your book is very important.
Oh, well, thank you. I met a woman the other day. She's a child therapist, and she says almost every child who comes to her damaged now is damaged because of social media. So this is the milieu we're creating for our children. You know, and I think, you know, something has to be done. Behavior has to change. But it's the behavior of the people who are doing the piling in. That's, you know, those are the people I'm hoping, you know, we'll think twice.
And we only have about a minute, but this is a typical bully situation too, because it's not, the old adage of, you know, treat people the way you would want to be treated. Well, that certainly isn't applying here, and people will say horrible things, but God forbid you say something horrible to them and they fall apart. I mean, most people understand that they wouldn't want to be treated that way.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's honestly, we're like, on social media, we're like babies crawling towards a gun. You know, we have no idea of the power of this weapon. And we're kind of, everyone's like making the rules up as they go along. It's like the Wild West. A few years ago, I made the mistake of emailing somebody who was like tearing me apart on a website. I said, you know, and it was the most horrible personal stuff she was writing about me. And I emailed her, and I've never done this since. And I said, you know, it's not nice. You know, if you're in a bar and you hear somebody on the next table say these incredibly rude things about you, you'd say something to them. Well, I'm saying something to you. So she immediately went online and said, you would not believe what's just happened. John Ronson. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, she's making the rules, and the rules are she can say whatever she likes about me, and I am absolutely not allowed to say anything back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you break a bone and the doctor casts it wrong and your leg is forever slightly out of shape. You know, that's what's happening with our rulemaking on the internet.
The great thing about your book is that it's so unsettling and so uncomfortable and so cringe inducing, and yet hilariously funny. And
thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm always looking to find ways to be funny in all of this.
It's great fun. It's So You've Been Publicly Shamed. John Ronson is the author of the new book. It's published by Riverhead. Again, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for the great book, and best of luck.
Thank you, Joe. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
Very nice to have you. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.